invited to ask any questions you might feel were appropriate or inappropriate. Yes.
Mr. Ashbury, first of all, I have to apologize for the Arizona heat.
I didn't know till I got here.
Your attention to events that occur indoors. I know that art has had a big influence on your life and on your writing. And I was wondering if you feel the same way about cinema. And if so, maybe if you could reflect on contemporary cinema a little bit and speak to the subject of your work.
Well, I probably has had more of an effect than visual art, although I've been an art critic and even a wannabe painter when I was a child. I don't think that I've gotten as much input or inspiration from artists from other things, music and movies being one of them. And there's a difference between the artists of contemporary film, who I feel an affinity towards, and just old run-of-the-mill B movies that are like some childhood memory that I keep seeing on TV. Of the filmmakers of of now or recent past, I think Godard is certainly an important influence, and Ozu. My favorite probably is Eric Rohmer right now, although I've just really gotten around to appreciating him in the last few years, although I've seen his movies for a longer time than that. These are mostly non-American directors. I like American films very much, but I can't think of a director who, per se, who has made a deep impression on me, like, you know, John Ford or somebody like that. They haven't particularly, but much of it is involved first with a sense of the past, and I have a vast collection of old B movies that I have taped at the wee hours of the night, and it's as though I was always trying to find something that I missed a long time ago. And in fact, when I was a kid, my parents were very strict and didn't allow me to go to the movies very much, except Shirley Temple movies, which they thought would have a beneficial effect. Also, we lived out in the country, and it was rather difficult for me to get back and forth from the nearest movie theater. And that's one thing that keeps me going back to cinema. And the other is in the case of people as like Ozu or Godard, which I just mentioned, the freedom which they have to suddenly stop things and you're in a different place without exactly knowing how you got there. I like David Lynch's movies a lot too, for that reason that you're in this world and you can't say what it means or how you got there, but it's affecting you, and this seems to replicate life for me. I don't know if you had any more specific. Well, I often respond to work that doesn't really resemble my own or what I would like to do, and I don't see violence in my work. You're right, but I actually like Twin Peaks better than any of the movies of his that I've seen, and it's, I don't know why, it's sort of like it's like reading Proust for me. To that may sound a little weird, but I have that feeling of suddenly being absorbed in something that I have no wish to get out of, but couldn't possibly get out of if I did want to. That great art can produce in one.
That's just to go back a little long way, but I wonder if you could say something about your relation or non-relation kind of toward a sense of heroism. I've said that, that's the one book that you really singled out for repudiation. I wonder if that's going to be from the road of the family.
Yes, it's true that the language poets think that's my only worthwhile book, I've been told. That book was written under strange circumstances. It really wasn't written as a book. In fact, I after my first collection was published in the Yale series, in fact, before it was published, I went to France on a Fulbright scholarship, and I ended up staying there for 10 years, and during which I was pretty much out of touch with American poetry, not because I wanted to be, but because you simply couldn't find it there, and my friends didn't write to me very much, or so it seemed, sending me their works and commenting on mine. So, I don't know, I felt kind of off from the American language, the American vernacular, which has a great role in my poetry, I think. And also, the book didn't seem to have any success, whatever. There are only a few reviews, most of them negative, except for the one that my friend Frank O'Hara gave it, and of course that didn't count for me. And so I thought, well, probably I'll never get another book. No one will ever publish another book of my poetry. And if I want to go on writing, I'll have to do it because I want to and not because somebody else is going to read it and enjoy it. And I was rather tired with the, or I feel I reached the end of a certain preliminary stage in my writing at that time and wanted to try something new, but I didn't know what, and so I just did a lot of experiments, sort of a lot of them involving collage or approaches similar to the cut-ups that Burroughs and Corso were doing at that time, and although I wasn't aware of them at that time, and all I knew is I wanted to do something other than what I had been doing, but I didn't know what that was, so I produced a lot of kind of unsuccessful experiments, and then suddenly had an opportunity to get another book published, or at any rate, a judge of the Wesleyan series wrote me strongly, hinting that I had a good chance of getting a book published there if I sent my work's in right away, so I sent in just whatever I happened to have around, and it was that, and it did come out, and a lot of it is not very satisfying to me now, although some of it is. I think I actually succeeded in moving into a sort of next style in some of the poems in the book. But for some reason, they are the earlier ones, and I kind of, after a few attempts at that which satisfied me, I then kind of, for reasons I can't remember or didn't know perhaps, dropped that style of writing and went on into much more dubious experimentation. But as I say, there are a few people who seem to think that he seems to like that. I'd say I like about 2/3 of the book, but every book I've found has, once it's published, there are things you wish you'd left out, and even though they look fine, even when you get proofs for the book, at some later point after it's out, they become irritating to you. And in this case, it was there were more irritating ones than usual.
Do you feel that some or much of your work can be read as a reaction to or activated by criticism and ambition, formally suggesting thoughts or getting?
Well, I think that probably that's the way I started out originally. When I first began writing poetry in the 40s, when poetry was pretty academic and stodgy, and I kept trying to track down the few poets who weren't, and there was always a kind of an anti-academic impulse that I felt there. I think, though, that there were a lot of poets, interesting poets of the 30s and 40s in America, whose work is still forgotten today and who should be looked at again. If I ever had time, which I probably won't, I would try to make an anthology of some of these people who were considered pretty important at the time I was first reading modern poetry, and now their names would mean very little to any of you. I suppose you mean the long poem called Litany that's in two separate columns. I don't know. I'm always trying to think of something that I haven't done yet, and often it can be something very rudimentary or unpromising. But the fact that I haven't done it yet makes me want to try and do it and see what will happen. And I don't know exactly how I started doing that. I was doing it for. Writing it for a while before I was actually aware that I was doing so. In looking back, I can see probable influences. One is the fact that we're so frequently in a room or a situation where you're trying to overhear two conversations at once, and I thought, what does this mean, or rather, what does what we hear of it all mean? Can it be possible that this is a different kind of meaning than just sitting listening to somebody talk? Probably not, because we never actually do that either. We're always wandering off into our own thoughts. Then I heard a work by Elliot Carter, his duo for cello and piano, shortly before I started writing it. And although I wasn't aware of it till after I'd written the poem, I think this was probably one of the things that got me started. There was the work has a cellist on one, or at least the premiere that I heard, on one end of the rather large stage, and the pianist is at the other end. So there is a kind of argument between these two entities who are quite distant from each other. And the, actually it's for violin, I think, and piano. The violin, of course, being rather an unequal adversary for the piano, which is has such a much stronger sound, and yet it frequently did seem to get the upper hand. And this kind of argument that went on between them, I find and continue to find very interesting in Carter's work. Much of it's all it really very much like that. There are the instruments seem to be voices that are talking with each other or ignoring each other or in unison, or they're almost personified. And another thing that a film buff of my acquaintance pointed out to me that I think is true, although I hadn't been aware of it till he said so, was the part of the film The Chelsea Girls by Andy Warhol, where there are two there's a split screen and two completely different monologues happening in each part of the screen. And I don't know, and there might be other examples as well, but what the point, I guess, is that this idea of two parallel discourses that don't meet but somehow inflect each other just by being there together strikes some kind of a chord in me that I want to listen to. I'm not exactly sure why.
You're a phone guy, so I'm taking the mail.
The ice storm? No, I wrote it in paragraphs. Mm-hmm. Also, well, in the case of Litany, people have asked me how I wrote that. What I did was I wrote the left-hand side of the page, the column on the left and then the column on the right, and then went on to the next page rather than writing and then going back to the beginning. People often want to know that, so I thought I'd mention it. No, that was a kind of prose poem which I've flirted with, an idea that I've flirted with from time to time.
You set out to write a story.
No, I was thinking of it more as a kind of journal of not of my own, but of somebody else's, some kind of forgotten 19th century poet. I was thinking about the poetry of John Clare at the time. He's a poet whom I feel a lot of affinity with. He was a 19th century farmer poet in England who was insane for much of his life and in an institution. But you can't really tell which of his poems were written when he was crazy and which weren't. He was born in Northamptonshire, which is mentioned at the beginning of the poem. Not that anybody's supposed to make that connection. New York, where I write most of my poems.
In your writing, you've written about the principle that makes works of art so unlike what the artist intended. How do you feel about your own work right now in that respect? What surprises you about it?
Well, there's always a difference between what we imagine we're going to be, this poem is going to be, and the way it actually comes out. I think, though, that it is. Years have rolled by that my poems are probably closer to my original intention, although my original intention is something very vague that I would be very hard put to talk about or define, which I suppose is probably true of any poet or any artist. but I feel more at ease writing now than I did when I was young, just I suppose because I've been doing it so long and it becomes a kind of skill that you eventually acquire if you keep at it. Although I know poets my age who wouldn't agree with this, who find that it doesn't get easier as time goes by, perhaps even more difficult. Well, unfortunately, it doesn't have any narrative structure. It's just like my other poems, except it's 134 pages long. I certainly have never written as much in a short period. Well, not a short period, about 6 months actually, but I've never written as much in a 6 month period as I did on this. I have no idea what the reception will be or whether anybody will ever read it even. It's completely sort of stream of consciousness, I suppose. Probably that could be said of all of my poetry, although it usually seems to apply to characters in novels like Molly Bloom rather than the author. There are kind of clusters of ideas that occasionally recur, I would say. There are things about death and aging and loss. These are not exactly new hot topics, but what can I say? They're there. I wrote it. I often take people's suggestions, and I have an artist friend who asked me what I'd been writing lately, and I said I'd been writing some short poems that I didn't really like very much. He said, why don't you write a 100-page poem and write it about your mother, because my mother had died shortly before that. So I actually did this in a way, although there's very little in it about my mother. Nevertheless, it occurs in a few places and maybe kind of an underpinning in the poem, as well as a dissolving relationship, which I was writing about at the time, which then stopped dissolving. Perhaps this is a result of the poem. But I kind of see it as a graph of floating things that are hard to seize, and that's the definition. I didn't really know what a flowchart was and for quite a while after I chose that as the title, and I looked it up in the dictionary, and it says it's a graph or a chart indicating the direction of an operation of work, as in a factory, or the charting of a complicated activity. And I suppose in that case this is a complicated activity. I don't think I was ever aware of the word until I happened to be listening to the Ollie North testimony on TV And it mentioned that he'd used a lot of flow charts while explaining his activities to the people he was trying to convince in the government to go ahead and let him do whatever it was he did.
You mentioned being in France for 10 years. Would you talk for a few minutes about your experience coming back to the States and explaining how you found American poetry after that 10-year hiatus?
Well, actually, I came back for a visit after after a 5-year period of not having come back because I didn't have the enough money to get back and go back. My parents would have sent me money to come home, but not money to return. When I came back, I discovered to my surprise that people were reading my poetry and that there was a, not only mine, but that there was a tremendous upsurge of activity in poetry, which there had not been when I, a mere 5 years before. I left around the time that the Beats started giving poetry readings, but at that time, younger writers didn't give readings the way they have, the way that has become very common. There were only a few readings at the YMHA in New York, where the Eliot and Auden and people like that would read. But these were not a very widely thing that happened very much. And so when I came back, someone asked me to give a poetry reading, and I was completely amazed. And then I noticed that at that same night there were about a dozen other poetry readings in New York, and that this happened all the time. So that I came back to find not only there was a receptiveness to my poetry, but to poetry in general, which hadn't been there before. So this was a pleasant surprise, and also by that time the first poets who got attention were the Beat generation, who became very visible promoters of their poetry. But when the first novelty of that had worn off, it seemed that then people had begun looking in for other kinds of poetry as well, so that there was a very broad range of interest of people who were actively interested in different kinds of poetry. And I just had never thought this was something that could happen. And it was mainly that, I think, that was was very different. And then I lived abroad for another 5 years, but I was then more aware of developments here. There was really not very much happening in France or in Europe or in England at that time, compared to what was America was really the place, I think, where new poetry got started, although it's different now. There are things happening.
You said that your poetry.
What can I say about what? Well, I don't know. I write these poems, and then I can't imagine, who was thinking like that or how they came out that way. I don't have a strong feeling of a persona of my own. It seems as though I feel as though I were a microphone that was being grabbed by various people and spoken through. I just read a couple of days ago someone, a poet, a painter, I think, who said that he had, it was an English painter, Michael Craig Martin, who studied painting in America, and said that he had once gone to hear Eliot read his poems in New York, and somebody asked him about the persona of proof rock, and he said that he had absolutely no idea what this poem meant or what he was thinking about when he wrote it or how it came out the way it did. It would seem totally strange to him, and he couldn't account for any of it. And I was very glad to see there was a distinguished precedent for me. I don't know. I'm sometimes appalled by the person who wrote the poem. And yes, I probably would like to know him or her better, just so that I would know who I was dealing with. Well, as I've gotten older, I've done less and less. When I was young, I used to labor over poems endlessly, and as I say, I think it in my case, it's kind of a sort of knack that you develop as you go along, and as time has gone by, I've revised less and less, although there are still times when I feel that's necessary, but mostly now, I think if I write something that seems unsatisfactory, I'd rather scrap it and write something else instead, maybe saving a few goodies here and there.
Do you think there's a postmodern body of fiction that maybe the postmodern painting going on a little bit equivalent fiction or poetry?
Well, in fiction there is, as I understand it, that, I mean, people like Raymond Carver and Al Barthelme and other kind of sort of absurdist or existential writers, which we would have called them, you know, a generation ago, are labeled postmodern. I don't know exactly what this means in the case of poetry. I still think modernism is alive and well and should keep on going.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Why do you feel it is that it's painting is really like a modernism rather than something called postmodernism? It doesn't seem to be the equivalent. I guess that's what I'm asking is, if there isn't an equivalent in poetry, let's say, why do you feel that is?
I'm not really sure, but I have a feeling that it's a term that's been invented by critics just to kind of create some ruckus. I can tell in architecture what postmodernism means. It means dormers and columns and things like that look like an old building. I don't think that my poetry, to take that as an example, it looks like an old building or is a kind of reconstruction of something that has gone to that has happened in the past and is a reaction to modernism. If by modernism you're talking about Stevens, Pound, Moore, et cetera, et cetera. I think there's a, today there's sort of a poetry is new formalism, which would sort of like to nuke us back to the age of Longfellow and have everybody rewriting the courtship of Miles Standish, as far as I can see. But I don't see anything, you know, revolutionary or evolutionary about that. It's the same kind of boring academic poetry that's always been there and will probably never go away. It's a question I just don't feel capable of dealing with. I've not looked into it enough to know.
Did you read the Cynthia Ozick review of biography of T.S. Eliot in New York?
No.
What is your sense of the contribution?
Well, I feel about a lot of it the way Harold Bloom feels about the tennis court oath. I like a lot of it, but it's gone farther than I would care to go, and therefore I like it even more. I feel that the burden has been taken off of my shoulders. I really think that you can stretch the way in which poetry means almost to the breaking point, but I don't think you can go beyond that, as so many of the language poets have done, as some of them have done. But at the same time, again, this is a sort of catch-all term that includes a lot of very different people, the same way I always felt that the New York School was a very unsatisfactory term that really didn't mean anything in terms of the people, the individual people in it. And I think that's true of language poetry too, and perhaps even more so because there's so much, in the first place, New York School was a label that was sort of attached to me and other poets in the group after the fact. We didn't sort of set out to found a new movement, whereas the language poets definitely have done this and are always issuing manifestos and anathemas and excommunications and to the point where it's really difficult to know what they're talking about when they use the term. But people, the certain poets in it, like Clark Coolidge, Leslie Scalapino, and Hedginian, who have there are quite a few that I like now that I think of it, but who have not reduced language to mere decorative shapes, which seems to be what the agenda is for some of the more extremists in the movement. Yeah. Yeah, I think they've gone beyond that and want to. I'd rather not name names, but yeah, well, I think that certain, probably most artists would agree to that. I can think of very few who enjoy working from under a label, but on the other hand, readers and audiences seem to find this much easier to deal with, and so it will probably go on happening. And if they feel that way, then why not? I mean, I just don't find it useful for somebody who's trying to create something. It's something that gets added on after the fact.
First, I proposed you before this kind of microphone voices grabbing, and it seems like the voices coming through the microphone get kind of weirdly distorted in a way. And I was just wondering, say, about Wordsworth or Whitman or Eliot, all of them seem to kind of turn on your poetry in fairly strange ways. And I wonder if you could, if you want to pick, or if you don't mind, pick one of them and say something about what you like and what you don't like.
Well, I don't know that I agree about Eliot. I don't see very many traces of his voice in mine. Whitman, perhaps. There have been times when I've felt myself to be influenced by him, especially in the poems that I've written, which have very long lines in them, which was what I discovered in him. I've often felt that Whitman is a kind of misunderstood poet in the sense that we tend to think of him as this sort of kind of bumpkin who utters his barbaric yawp all the time and always has something to say on every subject and doesn't know when to stop. But that's putting the worst case upon it, I guess. But I always find his work very beautifully crafted, and every word seems to count in his lines. In other words, this kind of afflatus idea of his poetry, I don't feel is there, or at any rate, it's not what's important to me. I think there's a great deal going on in the poetry besides the proclaimed message of reaching out to humanity, which is, of course, nothing wrong with that. But there are other things which make it even more effective in at what it's doing. And I think the writing as opposed to the content in Whitman is something that I find very inspiring. And I have no quarrel with the content either, but I find they reinforce each other in ways that always surprise me.
Yes?
There's something about your perception of the relationship between poetry, given your sort of dual identity as poet and painter, and the possibility of expression that leads to painting.
Well, this is something I've often been asked about, and I've never really been able to come up with an answer that's very satisfying to me, at any rate. The only thing that occurs to me is that, I did paint up until I was about 18, and had started out wanting to be a painter from my earliest childhood, and sometimes it seems to me in writing that I have almost a painter's instinct about using words.